Welcome back to the I'm Moving to Italy podcast. This is Nathan Heinrich, and I would like to welcome you back to Season 4, Episode 4. Well, I'm curious if you did the same thing I did today, and that was spend many hours watching the Queen's state funeral in London, not being in London personally, but on TV. I watched the funeral of Queen Elizabeth on Italian TV today, and I know for people in the United States, you had to get up kind of early to watch it. In Italy, of course, London is only about 1 hour difference in time from Italy, so I'm sure it will come as no surprise, considering last week's episode, we pretty much dedicated the entire episode to Queen Elizabeth and talking about her. I'm not going to be talking about the Queen very much this episode, but because I spent a good portion of the day watching the funeral, I was switching back and forth from watching the Italian version of the coverage to the BBC version of the coverage because I love the way the BBC does it, but I also wanted to get the Italian perspective on it, so it was interesting. There has not been a state funeral of that size for 70 years because that's how long the Queen has been reigning over the country and over the Commonwealth. And her father, of course, was the last state funeral. But in Westminster Abbey, where her main funeral service was held, where people from all over the world, leaders from all over the Commonwealth and all over the world, and former prime ministers and the president of the United States and presidents of all different countries and dignitaries and everybody, the main funeral for the Queen this morning was held at Westminster Abbey. And there has not been a state funeral held at Westminster Abbey, which is where the Queen was coronated. There has not been a state funeral there since the mid-1700s. So it was a once-in-a-lifetime event. I'm sure that in the future there will be other state funerals, but I don't think there will ever be in our lifetime a funeral anywhere in the world, maybe, that's that grand. And I have to say, I sure do love Italians, and I'm an American, but you have to hand it to the British because nobody does pomp and circumstance and perfect choreographed, just everything down to the minute detail. The uniforms, I mean, the headdresses, the cars, the carriages, the horses, the soldiers, I mean, everything inside and outside the church, the way that people are allowed to watch, the processions, I mean, the bells, the cannons, it's almost overwhelming. It is overwhelming to watch something like that. So I've heard from a number of the British listeners over the past week. It was wonderful to hear your stories and hear your connections to the Queen and how you personally either saw the Queen or how she impacted your family. And just this morning, I heard from one of our wonderful listeners who I've been in contact with off and on over the last year, Allie. And Allie shared a lovely story about her father, who was actually honored by Prince William, one of the very, very first person actually to be officially honored by Prince William in his official roles as a royal. And I've heard from many of you who have shared your personal stories with me. I'm not going to share all of them here because, again, this episode is not dedicated to Queen Elizabeth. But I did, because I spent the day watching this funeral and because I know a lot of other Italians were watching the funeral, I just wanted to just acknowledge that it happened today and it was really something to watch. So I've got some surrounding sounds from the funeral that I watched on Italian TV and I'm going to be sharing those with you at the end, as well as some other sounds that are also a little bit sobering. Some of the sounds from the recent terrible flooding that took place in the La Marche region of Italy. La Marche is kind of a central region of Italy. When the storm, which came kind of from the direction of Spain and then went over the island of Sardinia, when it was over the Mediterranean Sea, in that stretch of the Mediterranean in between Sardinia and the mainland peninsula of Italy, because the water was still so warm out there in the Mediterranean, this storm picked up a lot of power and a lot of force, and very unexpectedly caused some deadly floods within less than a span of 24 hours. I think it was closer to like just a few hours. 16 inches of rain fell in the La Marca region and killed at least 10 people. Multiple people are missing, including some children. And it was just a horrible, horrible kind of unexpected flash flood. There was nowhere for the water to go. The reports were that 6 months worth of rain fell in a matter of a few hours. Think about that. Instead of getting the rain distributed over half of the year, it all fell in a very concentrated area in a few hours. And so it just led to horrible floods and horrible damage. And so anyway, of course, we're sending our thoughts and prayers and well wishes to our Italian friends and family in that region. I know some people in the region of La Marca. Fortunately, they were not in this area that was affected, but we were just last year, we were driving right through that area that got affected by the flooding. So anyway, very terrible. There were some people in this town who were, you know, over 80 years old, and they said they've never seen anything like this. So it's just because it's never happened in recent history doesn't mean it can't happen. But one of the things I always sort of think about is, I think I'd like to be on a hill somewhere. Because at least if you're on a hill, you aren't going to get stuck in a flood. You might be, you know, you might have to deal with the fact that there might be an earthquake that you have to deal with. But man, flood damage and water damage can just be so unpredictable and so dangerous. So that's why I've always kind of been drawn to the idea of living up a little bit higher instead of in a valley. You know, where if a dam breaks or rivers overflow or, you know, there's a flash flood or whatever. Anyway, that's just a personal thing. I want to quickly say that normally, and when I say normally, I mean last year especially, when I was traveling, I would always update you and, you know, I would pre-record episodes. And I'm going to be doing a little bit of traveling. I'm not really sure how much or for how long this fall. And I, rather than try to update you on every single bit of traveling I do, what I'm going to do is try to keep the podcast going as normally and try to record podcasts in Italy and then share them with you. And of course, my surrounding sounds are all going to be Italian surrounding sounds. But what I'm going to do is when I return from my traveling, I'm going to just update you on what I did, where I went, and let you know when I'm back and I'm kind of stationary. The main reason that we have to travel is I do want to see my family, and I'm definitely going to be fitting that into my traveling this fall. But I have to get back to the United States with Alessandro because he is really well past his period of time that he's allowed to be outside of the United States with his green card. There's a certain provision that allows you, if you are taking care of a relative for medical reasons, which he has been taking care of his mother, his grandmother, and his aunt. He's been helping a lot with their medical issues. And you're able to get kind of a 2-year sort of grace period or extension to be outside the country. But when you are a green card holder and not officially an American citizen yet, you really are not allowed to spend long periods of time outside the country, because when you then go to apply for citizenship, they can look at your travel record and say, well, you know, you're really not living like a resident of the United States. You're living abroad still, and you can get rejected. I know someone who was from Brazil, not an Italian, but a Brazilian who just experienced this, and she was rejected. She's married to an American, and she was rejected in her first attempt to become a citizen. So anyway, I'm sure it's going to be resolved and they're going to figure out how to make that happen. But the long and short of it is that Alessandro has to be back in the United States. So we are kind of trying to figure out exactly how we're going to juggle all of that. But what we know for sure is this, that in the future, I'm going to be alone in Italy for probably a very extended period of time without Alessandro. And I'm going to probably have to go back and forth and visit him. He can make quick, short visits to Italy, but he can't be in Italy for extended periods of time. So it's going to be very interesting to be in Italy over the next few months when Alessandro is officially, you know, back in the United States and settled there, and we get everything all situated for him with his work and where he's going to be officially living. We don't have a, we have a place in the United States, but we don't have a house or anything officially built. And so we're kind of working on projects. And so anyway, we're just, I don't want to get into too many details yet until everything's finalized, but I just wanted to give you a quick heads up that I am going to be doing some traveling. I'm going to try to, as much as possible, not let it affect the podcast. And then when the traveling is over, then I'll share with you how everything went and what's going on and what the future holds. This past week, when I met with Vera for our Italian language coaching session, she was like, Nathan, you know, you're going to have to really, really work hard to get fluent because you're not going to have Alessandro there to help you. She's right, though. I am going to have to be kind of self-sufficient when it comes to language because I'm not going to have Alessandro there, which will be very good for me, because it'll force me out of my comfort zone once again and really kind of reinforce the fact that I really need to be more confident with my Italian, and it's getting better. I don't know if you've noticed, but I do feel like I've gotten a little bit, I've made some progress in my Italian. I feel like I've kind of graduated to like level 2 of Italian, let's put it that way. I'm not a complete beginner. I'm not fluent yet. I'm not trying to pretend like I'm fluent yet, because I'm not, I don't feel like that's fair to say, but I'm getting closer to fluency, and that feels good. So anyway, that's just kind of a quick heads up about what's going on with us. So the other thing that's happening this week is this is the last week of summer. So in just a couple days, it's going to officially be fall, my favorite season of the year. And the weather is already much cooler in Italy. Things have cooled down and the mornings are cooler. And you can definitely feel the weather already changing. So the other thing that's happening this week is that Italy is having their elections on the 25th of this month. So that's just in a few days as well. Italy will elect a new prime minister. And all signs are pointing to it being the very first female prime minister, which is going to be Giorgia Meloni. Now, there's a lot of people that have mixed feelings about Giorgia Meloni. And she's conservative. She's very pro-Italy. People are calling her a populist. People are also saying that she is a fascist. I don't think that's fair to call her a fascist. I've spoken to a lot of Italians who feel like it's time for a bit of a change in Italy, and so they're welcoming a little bit of a different approach, because the liberal side of has been in control in Italy for a while, and one of the things that Giorgia Meloni is very pro, and I try not to take sides in Italian politics. I'm just sharing with you what I've heard. There are some people who are horribly against her, say that she's bad news, but she's also very supportive of Ukraine. She feels like rather than having Italy be controlled by European leaders in Brussels as the European Union, she feels like Italy needs to be able to make some of their own decisions. She wants to kind of return power back to Rome and have it not be so much in the hands of the leaders of the European Union. I can understand that. There's probably going to be some positives that would come from something like that. I'm sure there'll be some downsides and some negative things. The world, I feel like, is very split. It's not just the United States that's split the world is very split between liberal and conservative right now, and it's a little disheartening to see. I see some of the same things happening in Italy as well as the United States, as far as the right against the left, liberal against conservative, and I hate to see it, because I think that we have a lot more in common than we realize, and we're focused more on what divides us than what brings us together. It's unfortunate, but it seems like it's the sad things. Like I saw those people that had to deal with the flood in the region of La Marche this past week. And you can see that they're all working together in their town to clear the mud out and to clear the water out and all the debris that washed in. And they weren't focused on their differences. They were focused on their common goal, which was to rebuild their cities in that area. And I'm not so naive as to think that, you know, we're ever going to get to a place in the world where we're going to have this utopia and perfect peace. I think that human nature, sadly, has proven that we're just never going to be there. We're never going to get to this place. But you won't ever hear from me anything except for respect for everyone's rights to their own freedom of belief and opinion. I support that above all else. So I respect, if you are someone on the right, if you're someone on the left, if you're someone that's a conservative or a liberal, I support who you are. I really consider myself to be an independent, and I find myself to be an independent when I hear about Italian politics and just world issues as well, because oftentimes I find that either extreme is usually kind of too much in one direction or the other. It's an overcorrection. And usually the truth can be found somewhere more towards a center. I'm hoping whoever gets elected, I hope that positive things come and it doesn't divide Italy even further. I feel like this episode is turning into a little bit of a downer. I don't want it to be a downer. I can tell you that when we get to our next segment with Vera, La Vera Italia, that segment is a lot lighter. So anyway, we have some laughs and it was a wonderful, I recorded it yesterday, and so I'm excited to share that with you. So anyway, I'm not trying to make this episode a downer. I'm just sharing with you some things that have happened in Italy, and I think combined with the Queen's funeral and the flooding and the upcoming kind of tensions about this election in Italy, it's just maybe causing me a little bit of personal melancholy. Plus, I'm feeling a little under the weather. I feel like I've gotten sick more this year than I've ever gotten sick. I don't know if I have strep throat right now or what my deal is, but anyway, folks, thanks for bearing with me. I've been so pleased to hear such positive feedback on this new segment with Vera. I've heard from so many of you over the past couple of weeks that you're just really enjoying the segment. And I have to tell you, I'm enjoying having somebody regularly be part of this podcast with me. I've always felt connected with you because, you know, I feel a connection with you as a listener. But there's something really special about being able to share this time with Vera. She's become a good friend. We connect with each other. We are almost the same age. We're good friends, but also she's an Italian, and her view on Italy is just so refreshing and so great to have it. It's such an asset. So I just want to say, Vera, thank you. Thank you for making the time out of your busy schedule to share this segment with us each week. I want to say thank you on behalf of all our listeners, because I get all the messages of how much you all are loving this segment. And Vera, I'm talking to you directly now, because I know you listen to these episodes every week. I want to thank you. I want to thank you for taking the time to be here with us. We all appreciate you, and we've all come to really love you. And thank you for sharing your expertise, your knowledge on Italy with us. Vera comes to each segment that we do together with pages of notes. And she's not reading her notes, but she uses them as reference. But mainly, she's kind of put all that information into her head. So she already kind of knows what she's going to talk about. I just want to once again say how much I appreciate this segment with Vera. So, okay. Now that I've given Vera a real proper thank you for joining us, let's get into the segment with Vera. So here's this week's segment of La Vera Italia. Hello, Vera, and welcome back to another segment of La Vera Italia.
Ciao, so good to be here.
Well, I have to tell you, Vera, we have been getting such great feedback on your segment. People are loving the segment with you. In fact, they're loving it so much, I'm thinking about renaming the podcast La Vera Italia, and then just hopping on occasionally to be your guest.
Come on, don't even think about that. You know, your listener love you. And yeah, I'm really flattered they like my segment too, but that should be just a tiny part of your life in Italy.
You are bringing an authenticity and a real true Italian's perspective to this podcast. It's fresh, it's appreciated, and it's fun. So I just want you to know how much everyone, I really have been getting a lot of messages on Instagram, emails. Everyone really, really loves it. So
thank you. Grazie a tutti.
Grazie mille and bravissima, bravissima to you, right?
Yeah, because I'm a woman and I'm only one, so that would be bravissima.
Bravissima.
And you are bravissimo.
And if I was going to say to both of us, would it be bravissimi?
Yes, correct.
All right, we got it. Now, I've got a little bit of a sore throat today. So go easy on me, okay? Maybe you give me a shorter question in Italian than normal, maybe?
Okay, whatever.
All right, go ahead. You go ahead and ask me your weekly Italian phrase. See if I can understand it and translate it back in English.
And reply to the question. Don't forget and that part.
And reply in Italian. Yes, my favorite part.
Secondo te, qual è la cosa più strana che fanno gli italiani?
Okay, I think I know where you're going. I think I know what it means. Can you give it to me slower?
Secondo te, qual è la cosa più strana che fanno gli italiani?
Okay, before I give you my answer, there's one word I don't know the meaning of, and it's the word fanno. Can you tell me what that word means?
Well, you should know it because we went over this. It's a very common verb and it's an irregular verb, of course, because most common verbs are irregular. And it's the verb fare, fare.
Fare, right.
To make, to right. Do, to make, to do.
Right, okay, okay. So, all right, can you... just one more time, ask me the question now that I know what that word means.
Secondo te, qual è la cosa più strana che fanno gli italiani?
All right. I think you said, in your opinion, or according to you, What is the strangest thing that Italians do?
Yeah, that's it. That's my question for today.
Wow, I got it on the first guess. That's amazing. Okay. Now let's see if I can reply to the question. Now, one of the things that you taught me in one of our coaching sessions that really helped me was when you're sort of stuck in Italian, just repeat back some of the things, repeat the sentence sort of back with your answer. So let's see if I can remember how to do that. It's going to be interesting to see if I can say this and see if you can understand what I'm trying to say. Secondo me, la cosa più strana che fanno gli italiani è dopo che gli that is the hardest thing for me to say, especially with a sore throat. Dopo che gli italiani sono stati sepolti, soprattutto Napoli, spostano il corpo in un altro luogo dopo pochi anni.
Okay, I sure wasn't expecting that.
I know you weren't. Did you understand what I said?
Yeah, and I was like, no, he can't possibly have said that word because he said sepolti. And I was like, yeah, the pronunciation, the accent was perfect, but he's talking about burying people.
Yep, that's right. Okay, so let me make sure that before we get too much into your answer, that I'm going to translate what I said in Italian into English really quickly. Okay, so first, your question, to recap your question, what is the most strange thing that you, that Italians do according to you? What is the strangest thing they do?
Yeah.
And by far, the strangest thing I've ever heard, Alessandro told me about this probably a year or two ago. I heard about this for the first time. He said that, especially in Naples, but I think it happens in a lot of different places in Italy, especially in the south, maybe even in Sicily. After people are buried, a few years after people are buried, they literally take them out of the grave or out of the ground or something and move them to another location. I've just never heard of anything like that in my life. And I don't even really understand why, except for it sounds to me like maybe there's like a big business in the funeral business and you just keep moving bodies around because you get to charge people more for new bodies coming in. I don't know.
Sounds really creepy when you put it this way, but okay. What do you mean by a few years? Do you mean like two or do you mean like 30?
No, I don't mean 30. So Alessandro has a relative, a close relative who passed away probably 7 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. And now it's time for that body to be moved.
Okay. So I don't know about Naples exactly because I'm from the northern part of Italy, but it's something really common in Italy for dead bodies to be like dig out of their graves and moved somewhere else after 20 or 30 years, depending on the town where you're buried. It's a problem of space. Cemeteries take a lot of space. And in Italy, many areas are overcrowded. So basically what they do is after 20, 30 years, sometimes 40, they just take the body out and put it somewhere else. Maybe ashes at that point or just bones, so they take less space. And they're put like in walls where there are marble plates with the names and the date, and then in the walls instead of in the ground. So that's what happens. It happened to my grandmother, for example. She passed away in the 1990s, and she had to move out of her tomb a few years ago. And so my aunt decides to move her to a whole other city where she lives now so she can be closer. So that's something very common. Now, I don't know if in Naples it's because it's a very crowded area, so maybe they need more space, or if it's something traditional for them. It could be that too.
It's a good point. I think you're absolutely right. I think it's part of the culture there. I think you're 100% right because it's such a built-up city. There's no open land in that city, and all the cemeteries, they're already maxed out on size. So they've built up, like you said, they have all these places where they've built up. But even those, people have to move out of those ones that are stacked. But what I don't understand is why you wouldn't want, it's so unheard of in the United States because we have such an abundance of room and space.
Yeah,
it's like everybody gets a casket. I mean, well, I shouldn't say everybody. There's a lot of people now over the past, you know, probably 30 or so years, it's become much more common for people to do cremation. I can't believe we're having this dark conversation.
Yeah, right. I was like, let's have fun with this segment.
This conversation just took a U-turn, really dark. We should have saved this for the Halloween segment. But in the United States, there's just so much room, and people are doing cremation now, but so many people still get buried in an old-fashioned, you know, casket, just like you see on the movies. The casket is lowered into the ground. The only way that casket is ever coming up out of the ground, and I mean ever, is if for some reason there's been some sort of crime committed and you have to, what we call, exhume the body. What's the word in Italian for that?
Riesumare il cadavere. So very similar.
Riesumare il cadavere. Okay, so basically dig up the cadaver or the body. Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's such a cultural difference that the idea of moving a body around and having possession of somebody's bones.
Yeah, I don't think we like that either, but it's just part of our tradition now because of overcrowded cemeteries. Because, for example, now that I live here in the Chianti area, there are a lot of tiny, tiny cemeteries just, you know, in the middle of nowhere now because there used to be towns there. And you can see tombs from the 1800s, early 1800s. And I love that. Okay, sorry, that's the Halloween. Second happy Halloween, everyone. Anyway, I love those because you can see the old pictures and they used to engrave like poetries and so beautiful. While in cities, you don't find tombs that are older than 20 years because they need space for the new deaths.
Well, I find it just so interesting. And I think you're absolutely right. It's a cultural thing. Sounds like it's slightly different. The cultural thing changes a bit from the north and the south, but it sounds like it happens in the north. It's just a matter of the time difference about how long it takes to get that to say, okay, it's time to move your family member to a new location.
Yep. That's what happens.
It's so interesting. Wow. Well, anyway, there you go. Welcome to another difference between Italians and Americans and people from other places. Very, very good question today. And surprise, surprise, we went there. We got dark.
Yeah, I was expecting something like, oh, they don't put Parmesan cheese on their fish pasta or things like that. And you went straight to the dead bodies that get riesumati.
Well, you asked me about the strangest thing. So that is by far the strangest thing I've ever heard of. So moving on to some lighter topics.
Yep.
I'm very curious to hear about your topic that you've chosen to discuss today in our segment, La Vera Italia.
I'm going to talk about 5 things Italians always do and 5 things Italians never do.
I can't wait. This is going to be so interesting.
Obviously, generally speaking, of course, I'm not talking about every single Italian's alive or dead or moving bodies or whatever. I'm just talking in general, okay? And there are 5 things that I think we always do. And the first one, are you ready for that? Any idea what I'm about to say?
I have no idea what these are, and I'm so interested to hear what you're going to say.
Because I want your opinion on that to see if I'm right.
Oh, I'll tell you my opinion. Doesn't mean that I'm going to tell you if you're right. It's just going to be whether I've heard about it or not.
So, a thing that Italians always do is stare. Like, Italians stare a lot. Sometimes even with their mouth wide open and they follow you moving their head like a tennis match or something. And that is this bit. Okay, you're laughing. So I guess you've noticed that, right?
You're absolutely right. They do stare. And apparently it's not. I'm glad that Italians are known for staring. But I feel like it's always because I'm giving them something really horrendous to stare at.
No, it's not you. It's not you. Well, it is especially true if you're a stranger. I mean, not a foreigner necessarily, but just a stranger, like that you don't come from that specific town. So it happens to me all the time when I drive here around small cities in the Chianti area. And even more so if you speak a foreign language. Mm-hmm. So they just think, okay, they speak another language, so I can stare at that. I don't know why they do it, but they do. And it's something I really don't like about Italians. And sometimes I look, stare back at them and I'm like, what? You know that hand gesture, the famous Italian gesture with your fingers all close together and moving your head up and down? That means, what do you want? So it's like, what?
What is it?
Do I know you?
Yeah, it's like a it's like a little belligerent. What do you want? What do you want from me?
It is belligerent because you know it's the we don't add a bad word in between what and do you want. So we use the hand gesture. It's the same idea.
The interesting thing I've noticed, not to interrupt your list, but the interesting thing I've noticed and the way I oftentimes try to handle this and it just fails miserably most of the time is when someone's staring at me, I start getting really uncomfortable, right? Okay, so, you know, because I'm like, okay, they're staring at me, watching me. So like the typical American that I am, I smile and I wave.
Yeah.
And guess
Poverino.
And guess what kind of response I get? Nothing.
Blank stare.
They continue to stare. They don't wave. They don't say hello back. They just continue staring at me like I'm just like I've just sprouted horns or something.
No, no, it happens all the time, even in big cities. And that's another problem because, you know, big cities, who cares? I'm not going to see you anyway. And so I can do whatever, no shame at all. So people stare at you. And I mean, not you, just you, because you're a foreigner. They stare at everyone. And they don't mind. When I travel to Northern Europe or the States, but especially Northern Europe, I notice that I'm a woman. And when I walk alone on the street, maybe I see that men purposely turn their head the other way, or even change the side of the road they're walking to make me feel safer. And then when they're close to me, they just say hi or not, just to say, okay, I'm fine. Here in Italy, they keep staring at you. If you try and go like, hi, and you know, I'm here, I exist, or good morning, they don't reply to your greeting. They're just staring at you. And because Italians need to know you. Like in small cities, it's like the question is usually whose son or whose daughter are you? They want to know who your parents or grandparents or ancestors are. And in bigger cities, it's like, okay, let me just, you know, check their clothes, their hair, their smile, and figure out where they are from. Is she prettier than me? And things like that. And so they just keep staring like if you were not there.
It's interesting. Do you think it's because, would you say that it's true to say that in general, again, we're talking general here, that in general, Italians are a bit of a suspicious group of people?
Yes, we are. Of course we are.
Like not very eager to trust right away?
Mm-hmm. No, we trust no one, literally. And it's something cultural, once again. Mm-hmm. We've been invaded for centuries, for millennia, mm-hmm. from other people, from other nations and so on. And that's why Italy is so different from north to south. And we've always mm-hmm. been sort of, submitted to them. And so we're always... I'm not scared, but still keeping an eye out just to figure out what's going on. So yes, we are definitely very suspicious and very belligerent still today. Every single city in Italy has an enemy, and it's not just soccer. It's, you know, even teasing or even not visiting the other town because, oh yeah, what's there to see? Nothing. Because they are the enemies.
It's so interesting you say that. You have 9 more items that we have to get through. And I keep asking you questions about this first one, but Alessandro has made that point very many times about Naples, Napoli, and Salerno, mm-hmm. which is just down the coast, right? Down the coast from the Amalfi Coast. So yeah, you're right. I think it's interesting, but also shouldn't we also just clarify that those who are listening to this podcast are thinking, oh my gosh, I'm thinking about moving to a country and everybody's suspicious. Nobody trusts me. People are going to start staring at me. We should also probably put in there, and I've experienced it firsthand as a foreigner moving to Italy, that eventually people stop staring or at least do it less. And eventually they do come to trust you and like you once they figure out who you are and whether they, and once they realize that they can trust you.
Absolutely. And even if you're, you know, a tourist here and you're just walking around and you see someone sitting at a cafe or something staring at you, but you just go there and say, sorry, I got lost, whatever. Where's the steering station? Can you help me? They will be more than glad to help you and even take you to the train station.
Yeah.
But unless you talk to them, it's like they're watching a movie. That's what we do all day. That's it. They just figured it out. You know, the typical Italian out of the window, looking at what's going on the streets. Mm-hmm. That's what we do. We are watching a movie. So you're just an actor in the movie of our lives.
I love it. What a good way of explaining it. Okay. No more questions for me.
No more questions.
I'll let you go on. We'll let you go on to number two of the first five.
Okay. The first five things Italians always do, of course, talk about food.
Yes.
We always talk about food. It's not only that we cook a lot and we eat a lot and we have very specific rules for food. We always talk about food. Our meals last forever, literally. I mean, we're used to that, but a normal dinner at home, just my husband and I, would take about 45 minutes, maybe an hour, because you talk about your day and you talk about the food you're eating. And if you go to the restaurant, it's 3 hours, like normal meal in the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And you talk about every single dish you're tasting there, similar dish you tasted in other restaurants or that you will taste next time you go there, and comparing and then talking about your best recipes, your grandma's. We talk a lot about food. We do. Mm-hmm. We do. And in fact, when I was sort of getting this list ready, I started, you know, the things that came just right off the top of my head, and they were all about food. So I said, okay, no, I'll just say we talk a lot about food.
Okay.
But let me just get a few things out of the system, or maybe we could do a whole segment another time about food.
Oh, we'll have plenty to talk about regarding food for a future, probably several future segments.
So we'll keep that. Anyway, just know that we are obsessed with food, so we talk a lot about that. So number three of the five things Italians always do is WhatsApp. I mean, the app, WhatsApp.
Oh, yes.
Do you even have that? I mean, you do have that in the States, but do you use it or do you just...
I only use it when I'm in Italy, and I had to change all my settings because for the longest time, the thing that bothers me the most about that app is it tells you when someone has read your message.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you when someone is online. It tells you way too much information, and I'm so private that I have such a hard time with people knowing every time I've read their message or anytime I'm online and or available for chatting or whatever, or the last time that I signed into the app. So... yes, I've noticed that that's all Italians used, and I honestly don't understand why, especially since so many Italians have iPhones, and it's free to send iMessages back and forth.
Okay, not so many Italians have iPhones, actually. I think it's 50-50 with especially Samsung.
Okay.
But I think I know why we love WhatsApp. It's like... we're really obsessed and we cannot live without it. And probably because here in Italy, families are very, very close, sometimes too close. And we talk a lot. Those are two truths about Italians. And we don't like being alone. We feel lonely and it's, you know, we get sort of anxious and this fear is creeping when we are alone. So basically, what happens every time an Italian is alone, they just take out their phone and send a message, or even worse, voice notes. Like they're on a bus and, okay, they're all alone there. They don't know what to do. So they just send a voice note to someone like 5 or 6 minutes. And that, I think it's kidnapping. It's not just sending a voice note. It's literally kidnapping someone because I have to listen to you bubbling for 5 minutes. And then they listen to them on speaker, and even phone calls, they're always on speaker. I don't know why. Probably the same things I was mentioning before. We are the main character of our own movies, and we don't care about the ones around us. And they talk about really private things, and it's really oversharing. I don't want to know what, you know, medical issue the person sitting next to me on a train has or things like that, but I have to.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I think it's just because of we don't like feeling lonely, and having someone so close to you. So WhatsApp gives you this power, and also to keep your family under control. Italian moms love the things you hate about WhatsApp, so they know when their kids just logged in, logged out, who they talk to, and it's
it's Italian mother's favorite tracking device for their kids, or for other family members.
Yeah, you can check everyone.
That's the best explanation for why people are use WhatsApp in Italy. I think that's a great insight into it. And anybody moving to Italy needs to know that Italians, I mean, to a person, when you are giving someone your number, your contact information, it could be a real estate agent, could be someone at school that you meet, could be anybody out and about that you're exchanging information for business or anything, they're always going to say, WhatsApp? WhatsApp? Or
and
WhatsApp?
Really getting out of control. Even, I don't know, the plumber who needs to come to your place to repair something, or schools, you know, teachers say to the parents, okay, I'll send you a WhatsApp. No, I don't have to have a WhatsApp. And by the way, my husband doesn't have WhatsApp. He doesn't want anything to do with that. So basically, people forget about him. He never gets Christmas greetings or birthday greetings. Or if they do remember, then they send a WhatsApp text to me and they're like, tell Luca or show this picture to Luca. And I'm like, Luca has an email address. Actually, he has three of them. You can just send the picture any other way and not WhatsApp. He's on Telegram or whatever, but no, they need WhatsApp.
That is so interesting. I don't like WhatsApp because it's owned by Facebook. And I found out, you know, that they monitor everything everybody says. I just feel like the whole thing is a privacy invasion. So that's one of the reasons why I don't love WhatsApp. But Italians don't care about any of that, apparently. They care about the fact that they use it and it's what they like to use. I think it also is, you can use WhatsApp as long as you have a Wi-Fi connection. Tell me if I'm wrong here. Let's say that there are people out there who don't want to pay for a phone plan.
Uh-huh.
As long as you have WhatsApp on your phone, you can still communicate to anybody. As long as you went to a local bar and got a coffee and you used their Wi-Fi, you could survive. And there are people I've met, a number of people, Italians, who they don't want to pay. They want to own a phone, but they don't want to pay that monthly service charge for a phone. So they'll use WhatsApp because it's an app and they see it as a cost savings.
So among the five things that Italians always do, there's this thing that probably is, I mean, I never thought about it as a weird things that Italians do or don't, but then a friend of mine made me realize that. So the thing is, when we pay for something, we leave the money on the counter. We would never put it in the very hand of the person in charge of getting the money from us. And the same thing for the change. So we won't just put our hands palm up waiting for the coins and the change in our hands. We just wait and put the money on the counter. And I had a friend of mine who was like, that's rude. I mean, don't they want to even touch my hand? And that was before COVID, of course. They don't want to even touch my hand. Am I this terrible just because I'm a foreigner? But that's not the case. That's quite the opposite. It's not that we don't want to touch you or anything like that. It's because putting the money on the counter is to show you that I'm not cheating. So, you know, Italians are famous, especially in the past, to sort of con people or things like that. So basically, like a magician, you know, I can show you 50 euro and have it in my hand. And then when I put them in your hands, they're like 5 euro. There you go. And you're like, oh, sorry. No, I gave you 50. Remember, you saw. So by putting the money on the counter, we're actually saying, you're safe with me. See, it's right there. My hands are up. So you take the money. And they do the same to you. It's not that we think about this every time we pay, but I've always seen my parents putting the money on the counter. They've seen their parents doing that and so on back to the medieval times, probably.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is becoming less and less of an issue because the things that you pay with cash are usually like smaller purchases. Like if you go to a tabaccaria, or if you go to get a coffee. But if you're at a grocery store, at a lot of places, you're going to use your credit card. So that doesn't even usually come into. But what's the etiquette? First of all, I'd like to say that I've noticed that there's oftentimes a little tiny tray.
Yeah.
Right? There's a little tiny tray, and I had to learn what that tray was for. And it's to not only put your money in when you're paying, but also to receive your change back.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I didn't, at first, I actually did think at first, maybe this is a COVID thing. And then I realized, nope, this is the traditional way to exchange money here.
It is. And I mean, it's just different. You know,
polite. I think it's actually quite polite. And then you're explaining it as it being a respectful way of saying, look, it, you can trust me. I think that's interesting. All right. So that brings us to number five of the things Italians always do.
Be late. We are always late. Aren't we?
It's one of the things I love the most about Italians, because I have the same problem. So I fit right in.
So it could be just a minute, you know, like, or fashionably late, like 10 minutes or a whole 45 minutes, an hour, depending on the person you're dealing with, the Italian you're dealing with, mm-hmm. or the occasion. So even if we do our best to get there in time when meeting friends or families, because we really do, a few minutes are okay, but we don't even try to get there on time when we have like an appointment in a public office or the dentist, the doctor, the lawyer, whatever, because we know they're late. We know we are going to wait for like an hour and a half. So we just say, yeah, whatever, the appointment is at 5, I get there at 5:30. Now, this is very different from north to south. Once again, in the north, we are more punctual, I have to say that, and going south, it's later and later, and it's all about, yeah, let's meet in the afternoon. While in Milan, we're like, yeah, let's meet at 3:45, because then I have another meeting at 4:48. So, yeah, it's very different. But still, a few minutes late, it's very, very common and normal for Italians. So don't expect us to be early. Never. Be grateful if your Italian shows up on time. And just get a spritz while waiting for your late Italian.
So would you say that it's true that it's very unusual for Italians to get upset at other Italians for running late?
Yeah, because so I figured that out myself in very recent years, especially moving to Tuscany, so the central part of Italy. It was like 11 o'clock and a friend of mine was like, yeah, I have to go because I have an appointment in Siena at 11. And I'm like, it's 11 and we are 20 minutes drive from Siena. Yeah, what's the problem? For me, it would be a problem. I mean, 20 minutes late and then you never know, you have to find a parking spot and whatever. I would never do that. So it drives me crazy. I'm always early or right. I learn how to get there right on time and not early, because I used to wait even for an hour for people to show up. So I do get mad. So if we schedule an appointment, just be on time. But yeah, it's just that it's different. When Italian, you know, your average Italian says 11, they know it's going to be 11:30. So they only get mad if you get there at 11:50.
All right. So now I'm curious about the things Italians never do. This is going to be very interesting. Let's hear what you came up with for these.
Okay. Italians never swim after a meal. You have to wait. It's 3 hours, at least 3 hours after a meal before you can dive into that pool or swim into the Mediterranean Sea or whatever. Because, well, actually, I don't know why, but people say because otherwise you'll get a congestion. So, you know, it might make sense if you're like swimming at the North Pole in January, not in Italy, Mediterranean Sea, or even, you know, kids going to their swim lessons in indoor pools when the temperature in there is like 45 Celsius degrees. No idea in Fahrenheit, but very hot anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's dangerous. It's just that it's part of our being a little bit hypochondriacal. Come on, I can't pronounce that.
Hypochondriac?
Hypochondriac, thank you. Hypochondriac, come on, I could say some words in Italian. You should all study Italian anyway, because you all want to move to Italy. So
that's what we're doing here. That's absolutely right. Hypochondriaco.
Hypochondriaco, yes. We are all a little bit hypochondriaci. So that's the plural.
Okay.
So like fearful, or I don't know, it's weird. And one
cautious. It's like cautious
with certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So basically when we're kids and we go to the beach and parents are like, you can't swim right now because you have to wait 3 hours because we just had lunch.
My gosh. It's
just the crazy thing. And that also applies to the famous colpo d'aria. We never sit in front of an open window or, God forbid, the air conditioner. There's no such a thing in Italy, right? Because then we get la cervicale. That's your neck that gets stiff, but it's not like stiff neck. It's literally the cervical arthritis, arthrite cervicale anyway. They say that you get really, really bad when you age, or you get a cold, or your But I mean, no. And that's why we always wear warmer clothes compared to Northern European or Northern Americans. You will see, like in a day like today, we're end of September, you will see us wearing jackets and scarves and boots. And then the American tourist, no, even Northern European, with their flip-flops and tank tops.
Right, because they came down to sunny Italy and expect great weather.
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, it's pretty cold today, but we cover up more. When I was in Washington State in winter, I was freezing and it was freezing cold. I mean, and I had some friends of mine taking the bus to school at 6 o'clock in the morning. Don't even get me started on how early school starts in America, but still. And they had their hair wet. They just took a shower and I was like, my mom told me not to do that. We're not supposed to do that, not even in the summer. I do, but in the summer, not in winter. So I think we have different approaches to the cold. And also, once you're used to a thing, it's different to adjust to a different thing. Because I mean, right. It's the same don't cold even for get, everyone.
Yeah, and don't even get started about cold drinks.
Oh, yeah, ice. I mean, you have glasses full of ice and no drink. We don't.
Italians think that that's going to give you like a sore throat or something, right?
I think most something to do with your stomach if you drink very cold drinks.
Interesting. Okay, very interesting. Okay, that was number five of things Italians never do. What's number four?
We never, ever say good luck because it's bad luck. Welcome to Italy. So, sorry about that. We have a lot of superstitions, right? So we have the phrase good luck, which is buona fortuna.
Mm-hmm.
Buona fortuna. But we don't say that. So if you have, I don't know, a test or an exam in school, or you're applying for a job, you have an interview. We don't say buona fortuna because it's bad luck.
No.
We say something funnier. Have you ever heard that sentence?
I have, and I think it's absolutely hilarious. It still doesn't make any sense to me. I think we're on talking about the same one.
In bocca al lupo.
In bocca al lupo, exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
In the mouth of the wolf.
Yes, in the mouth of the wolf.
What in the world does that even mean?
There are a few, you know, explanations about that. Scholars are not 100% sure. Some say that the mouth of the wolf, when the she-wolf, founder of Rome, you know, and so on, she keeps her baby wolves in the mouth. That's the safest place where you can be.
Because dogs or wolves move their puppies, they move them in the mouth.
Yeah. And someone says it's because you sort of, it's like saying the opposite so that it becomes true. It's sort of another superstition. So it's like, you're a hunter, and if you kill the wolf, you're fine. So we're all safe. We don't know. Mm. We just say in the mouth of the wolf. And the answer is, so the other person needs to reply. Otherwise, it's still bad luck. So you tell me.
In bocca al lupo.
Perfect. And I say, crepi lupo. Crepi.
Crepi lupo.
Yeah.
What does that
die.
Mean?
Sorry. He wasn't expecting that.
Oh my gosh, Italians are so beautiful and so dark all at the same time.
So it's not you die, it's the wolf. Oh my god.
Die! Oh my gosh, wait a minute.
Okay, it's not that I wish you die. The wolf.
Are you using the word die in Italian? Or using the word die, what do you say? Like, what does that mean? May the wolf die? Tell me what are you saying?
May the wolf die, but in of a bad death.
Wait a minute, what? What are you saying?
I'm crying. I'm literally crying. Yeah, because the verb to die is morire. Morire, to die.
Right, okay.
But crepi is the imperative. So I'm ordering the wolf to die, but it's the verb. Sorry, I can't even say it. Okay.
You're ordering the crepi means to order the wolf to die.
In a bad way. So crepa, it's more than die. It's a different, you know, shade of the verb to die. It's like die in a bad way.
Die a painful death, in other words.
Yeah, sort of something like
that. Oh my gosh. Whoa.
Oh. So you edit this and just say that.
I don't know if I'm going to edit this. This is too funny. Okay, wait a minute. So let's just recap that. So I say to you, in bocca al lupo.
Yes. And I say.
What do you say?
Okay. Yes, and I say crepi, crepi.
Just the word crepi?
Yeah, or the whole sentence, crepi il lupo. But crepi, may it die of a painful death, is enough.
Wow, crepi. Okay, wow. All right, so I've had Italians tell me in bocca al lupo, and now I'll just know I can reply with the word crepi.
Yes, that's correct. That's the only proper answer if you really want these things to go well. So they.
Okay, crepi. Like the word, we have the word, well, it's just, it sounds exactly the same. We have the word crepi, like crepey skin, when your skin becomes old and crepey.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's the same.
It's not the same. But
that's crepa, yeah.
But yeah, that's how we would, that it sounds exactly the same, except for you're using a little bit more of the rolled R, crepey.
Yeah, so the word crepare is a synonym of to die that we use when we wish someone dies. I know.
Oh my God.
I was trying to.
On just any average Tuesday when we wish someone.
I was trying to make things better, you know? Oh, yeah, but we only use it when.
We only use it when we're doing voodoo on somebody and hoping that they die. So hilarious.
So, anyway, we have all sort of superstitions, a lot of gestures or phrases that we say every time we want to keep evil at bay or want to keep the bad luck away or we don't want to jinx it. But that is getting really too long. We should have another segment about that. So we have the next two topics, the two episodes covered for that. And okay, let's get back to number three things Italians never do. And well, we never say, I apologize. It's my fault. We never do that. And
interesting.
you know, we say I apologize when it really doesn't matter. Like, I don't know, for example, I drop your pen and I say, oh, scusa. So scusa is, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I apologize. Mm-hmm. But when the things get serious, business, love, family, when you're really fighting with someone, you will never see us saying, I apologize. It was my mistake or things like that. I'll try to improve. No, we always blame someone else or fate or yes, but, you know, all these sort of things. And it's, I don't know why I'm not, you know, into the minds of every Italian, but it's just something we do. And just to prove my point, think of that. The word apology and the word excuse, like make up an excuse in Italian, are the same word. We don't have a separate word for the two words, apology and excuse.
So it's scusare?
The noun is scusa. So when we say I apologize, if we do say it, it's chiedo scusa. Literally, I ask apology.
Okay.
So chiedo scusa. Or I make up an excuse and say I was stuck in the traffic when I was not. Una scusa. An excuse. Because to us, it's the same thing. We are not actually saying sorry. We are finding excuses that justify what we just done.
Okay. So just a real quick question on this one. What would happen if you, because I was raised that we must say, I'm sorry, and we must take responsibility and say, listen, it was my fault. I made a mistake. But how do Italians react when somebody were to say that to them? Like, I'm sorry, I apologize, it was my fault. How would they feel about that?
If it's another Italian saying that, we wouldn't believe it, right? It was like, yeah, right, you're just saying that and it's part of the game. And then I would like, oh, no, come on, it wasn't your fault.
Interesting.
If it's a foreigner like you, we would say like, poverino. Poor thing. He's really saying it's his fault. Why can't he just blame the government or, you know, the rain or whatever?
Wow. They would never even. So one of the options is they would never assume that maybe he's just genuinely sorry.
I mean, generally speaking, it's just something we don't do. So when you do it, we are like, oh, this person's so sweet. So it's like Mother Teresa, you know, someone so perfect that can say they're wrong.
Well, you know, I have to say, on a personal note, in my relationship, I have been living with an Italian for the last 6 years. Mm-hmm. When we have our very, very occasional arguments, but we do have them like every like every other couple, I am in a habit of apologizing, so I would always apologize. So I think you're 100% right, but I would never get an automatic apology in return. I'd be like, wait a minute, don't you understand how good it felt when I apologized to you? When are you going to apologize to me?
No.
So we had to come to an understanding, because that is two very different cultural approaches to resolving conflict that were not very balanced.
Yeah. But probably he will come and offer you to make coffee for you or maybe to go for a walk. That's, I mean, I don't know Alessandro, but it could be mm-hmm. his way, right?
Yeah, you're right. That was his way. And I had to learn to interpret it that way. But also he's also learned to apologize like an American.
Yeah, of course.
I've also learned to not have to require a deep apology like an Italian. So we're finding some sort of a middle ground, which is good.
You see?
Yeah.
Like learning languages, learning. But just remember that sorry and apology and excuse are the same word. So our apologies could be, yeah, but it wasn't my fault. It was because he did that first.
So interesting. All right. That's number three.
Okay, this is just something different. Women never take their husband's name. It's forbidden by the law. It's not that we don't want to. We cannot. We are not allowed to.
I think that's so interesting.
So when we get married, we keep, we have to keep, we must. It's not even an option, the idea of changing last names.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's kind of great in some ways. So who carries on the family name in the family? Who gets the kids? What last name do they get?
So until a few years ago, or probably last year, you know, very, very recent times, it was the father's last name, only the father's last name. Of course, things are changing. The world is changing. We have same-sex couples. We have people that are not married and things like that. And they're fighting. Now parents can choose which last name to give to the baby or maybe even giving both of them. Like in Spain, they used to do that a lot. But once you have a last name, it's your last name forever and ever. You cannot change it. It's part of your identity. You cannot change your signature, your fiscal tax code that is given to you at birth based on your name and last name and date and place of birth and all the things. It would be crazy. So we are not allowed to take our husband's names. So I'm talking about husbands and wives, of course, here because we're talking about traditions. We can like have a hyphen or a slash and edit if we want to, but not in our official documents, just pretend gay.
Yeah, we called it a hyphenated name, like a dash.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you bring this up. I think I wrote an article in Real News from Italy. I wrote an article about the fact that they just now legalized the fact that on a birth certificate, you now legally can have just the mother's name. Like, for example, if it was, you know, a mother who is a single mother, the father disappeared or something, you know, he's an absent father, or maybe he even died, the mother could have just her name on the birth certificate. So that's a very recent development. You're right. This just this past year.
It is. It is. I mean, it is if the father is known. If the father is unknown, then even in the past, it was usually the mother's name. But that has just been for such a short time when being a single mother was allowed by society. Right. Before that, you just had to get married to someone, even if it wasn't the father of the baby you were carrying or whatever, right? Pretending it was your little brother. But if we stick to this century, when women were allowed to be single mothers, then it was their last names. But if a couple was married or even not married, but the father was like, yes, this is my baby, then it had to get the father's last name.
Wow. Very interesting. Okay. So what is the last thing that Italians never do on your list?
Okay. I saved the best for last because you really need to listen good and very carefully, because this is for all of you. Italians will never, ever, ever judge you for your poor Italian. So don't be ashamed. Don't be afraid of trying your Italian on us, because we know it's an effort and we really appreciate that. Obviously, especially if you have sort of an accent still or your grammar is pretty shaky and the Italian you're talking to speaks some English, then they're switching to English right away to help you. But they will really appreciate the effort. So don't feel scared, anxious. Don't just get fear get in your way and speak Italian to us.
Oh, that's a great one. Thanks for saving that one for last. I love that one. And it's something I have to continually remind myself, because I want to be able to speak perfectly. And so sometimes I find myself just avoiding the conversation because I'm afraid I'm not going to pronounce something correctly or even know how to respond to something. But you're helping me get there. You're helping me with my confidence on that. Thank you.
In bocca al lupo con il tuo italiano.
Crepi.
Yeah.
That's so great. Oh my gosh. Okay, so.
So usually I leave you with an Italian word you should remember, or just, you know, an Italian word that you might like. But today we sort of already did that with in bocca al lupo. And I know you're all in the process of moving to Italy or dreaming of Italy. So I say to all of you, in bocca al lupo.
And we say back to you, crepi.
Yes.
Oh, man. Well, thank you, Vera. That was great. What a great list of five things Italians always do and five things Italians never do. I think that we all learned something new. I know I did it, as I always do. So thanks again for taking the time to be here with us and sharing a little bit of La Vera Italia with us.
Oh, I really had a lot of fun tonight. We had a good laugh, and thank you again for having me here. And I'll see you next week.
Looking forward to it. Have a great week, Vera.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao, ciao, ciao. Wasn't that a great segment with Vera? I really enjoyed those five things Italians always do, five things Italians never do. So interesting. So thank you, Vera, for helping us to understand Italy and Italians from the perspective of an Italian on a much deeper level. That was fantastic. Well, that brings us to our surrounding sounds for this week's segment. And as I said earlier, I have two surrounding sounds to share with you. Some of them are some clips from Italian TV of the Queen's state funeral in London. It took place partly in London, partly outside of London in the city of Windsor at Windsor Castle. So I have a collection of these sounds from Italian TV to share with you, but also have some sound effects from the recent flooding that took place in the region of Le Marche. So here are those sounds, and I will be back afterwards to say goodbye.
Maddalo, ho 44 anni e faccio l'operaio e purtroppo è successo, come vedete, quello abbiamo subito un'alluvione e adesso ci stiamo rimboccando le maniche perché abbiamo iniziato a fare qualcosa e stiamo aspettando l'aiuto della protezione civile e dei vigili del fuoco, sperando che ci tolgano tutto il fango e acqua e quant'altro. E non preoccupatevi perché adesso qui ci vorrà diverso tempo per rimettere tutto a posto. Fortunatamente anche la stagione estiva ormai è andata, perché se capitava in piena estate sarebbe stato un grosso problema anche per il turismo e tutto, insomma. E, da dire molto, c'è gente che è stata meno fortunata di noi, insomma. Qui ci sono stati diversi morti, quindi in questi casi penso che la cosa migliore è stare zitti e rimboccarsi le maniche, insomma. Tanto non ci aiuta poca gente, ci sono i volontari. Volevo dire una cosa, magari il 25 si vota, no? Chi chiede il voto sarebbe meglio che venga qui a sparare il fango insieme a noi piuttosto che sta in giro a fare propaganda e mangiare le spalle nostre.
Ma quando è successo ieri sera che stavate facendo? Mi racconta un po'
noi,
dove stavate, che facevate?
Noi sinceramente non ci credevamo tanto, perché di allerte mete ce ne sono state tante. E ieri all'improvviso tutti dicevano attenzione, 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 e poi è arrivato un mare d'acqua, legno. Cioè, dovuto a anni e anni di incuria da parte di chi deve gestire le cose non le gestisce.
Questa mattina verso le 6.
E quanto era alto il fango quando siete arrivati?
Lì, praticamente arrivava all'altezza della linea qua.
C'è mezzo metro d'acqua dentro e adesso con la santa pazienza e tocca buttarla via.
C'è stata paura, mi racconti?
La paura sì, perché qui era un diluvio, perché un fiume da parte di là veniva giù, da qui veniva giù un altro e da là un altro. Un incrocio dei fiumi in mezzo alla piazza, può immaginare quel che era. I toni, i lampi, non è che non si può descrivere, non si può. Io in 80 anni che ci ho mai visto una roba del genere. Questo è tutto.
L'abbiamo fatto da poco.
Quale però? Tanta paura. Era in un attimo, era arrivata qua sola.
Adesso vedremo un po'.
Tireremo sulle mani, ma sarà difficile. Il negozio mi ha ribaltato tutto, il negozio di frutta.
No, quella è giù.
La paura è tanto. C'è stata un po', c'è niente da fare. Meglio i danni. Io anche c'ho una macchina di qui, ha fatto il giro della piazza, poi l'ha parcheggiata laggiù.
the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband.
Did you hear what you wanted?
A long life can pass by many milestones. My own is no exception.
It has always been easy to hate and destroy. To build and to cherish is much more difficult.
I declare before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and to the service of our great imperial family to which we all belong.
It's understandable that we sometimes think the world's problems are so big that we can do little to help. On our own, we cannot end wars or wipe out injustice, but the cumulative impact of thousands of small acts of goodness can be bigger than we imagine. It's worth remembering that it is often the small steps, not the giant leaps, that bring about the most lasting change. We should take comfort that while we may have more still to endure, better days will return. We will be with our friends again. We will be with our families again. We will meet again.
Don't you just love that choral music, those bagpipes, the sounds of the horses' hooves on the streets of London? Just such rich sounds from the Queen's funeral, and kind of crazy sounds. You got to hear some Italians talking about their experiences dealing with the flood in La Marche. So anyway, thank you to those of you who have recently left reviews on the podcast. If you happen to listen to the podcast on Spotify especially, or on Apple, Spotify, there's nothing to write. You just leave 5 stars, hopefully 5 stars. And that would be super appreciated. If you have a moment to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, that's where the majority of our listeners listen. While you're listening, you can actually leave a review. It's not very difficult. If you don't know how to leave a review, send me a message and I'll send you a quick little how-to video about how to leave a review on the podcast. It means the world to me, and it really helps our podcast grow. So thank you. And thanks again as well to our sponsors. Thank you to ExpressVPN for providing one of the most essential products to anybody who's planning on moving to Italy or even traveling long term, to be able to know that you are protected when you're using public Wi-Fi, to know that you can use your VPN to make calls and text messages for free, and your streaming services will not be locked while you are traveling abroad. Just knowing all of those things makes their service so, so incredibly valuable. You get 3 months for free when you sign up for ExpressVPN with the link that is on the I'm Moving to Italy website. So be sure to visit imovingtoitaly.com. Check out the links. There's a link in the menu that's called the Italy Kit. Talks about some things that I recommend that you need when you're living in Italy. And one of those things, of course, is ExpressVPN's link. You get 3 months free when you sign up for a 1-year package. So thank you to ExpressVPN for being a wonderful and our very first sponsor of the show. And then, of course, thank you to Babbel Language for being another sponsor of our show. I started using Duolingo. I did it for 500 days. Certainly wasn't a waste of my time. I know a lot of listeners use Duolingo as well, but I didn't start to really feel like I was gaining traction on understanding Italian from the inside out. I felt like I was just learning a bunch of vocabulary words with Duolingo, but with Babbel, the way they structure the lessons and the way you write, speak, read, they hit you on all of the different learning fronts, because we all learn a little differently. And so it's very adaptive to all learning styles. So I really, really appreciate Babbel Language. I love their program. You get 55% off a lifetime membership. It is just the best, in my opinion, the best. I started using Babbel Language, fell in love with their program, and since I started using it, they have become a sponsor. So I started using Babbel Language long before they were ever a sponsor of our show. So thank you again to both of our sponsors. Thank you to you for coming back and sharing this time with me. Without you, there's no show, there's no podcast, there's no point. And I just want you to know that you are my listening family. You are why I come back week after week, and I'm enthusiastic to share this time with you each week. So thanks again for being here and sharing this time with me. Well, wherever you are listening to the sound of my voice this week, I hope you are healthy and well, and I look forward to being back here with you next week, as always. So until then, take care. God bless. Ciao, ciao, ciao.